Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with a program that helps you learn and improve your American English. If you have ever considered a career in journalism, we have something special for you today. We will hear from VOA correspondent Kane Farabaugh about former President Jimmy Carter, who turned 90 last week. Kane has interviewed him many times and recently spent a few days with Mr. Carter in the southern state of Georgia, in the city of Atlanta, and in the tiny town of Plains. That is where the former president was born, grew up, and still lives. Kane followed Mr. Carter and his wife Rosalind as they live their busy lives. He interviewed the former first couple as well. VOA's Christopher Cruz spoke with Kane about what it is like interviewing Mr. Carter.
Thanks, Jim. I spoke with Kane Farabaugh shortly after he returned to his office in Chicago from the trip to Georgia. He told me he has spoken with the former president 11 times since 2005, 8 times in person, and 3 times on the telephone. The first time Kane was to speak with Mr. Carter, he was given 2 or 3 weeks' notice. The reporter says he used that time to read everything he could find about the former president, and he has continued to do so.
In the course of my VOA work, I had to become well-versed about Jimmy Carter, and since that point, I've been keeping up as much as I possibly can. I've read every one of his books, and I've read most of the books written about him, too, just so that I'm able to stay abreast or have knowledge about what's being written, reported, or said about him.
One of the issues reporters face when interviewing someone repeatedly is that they might risk losing their neutrality toward the person. I asked Kane if that had happened to him with Mr. Carter.
I think that I'm able to take a critical look about how people respond to him regarding his presidential accomplishments. You know, it was I was young at the time that he was president, so it's very difficult for me to remember what it was like to live in the 1970s. But you know, there's this unpopular impression of him because it was a tough economic time in the United States. The hostages were in Iran, and the president at that point seemed somewhat ineffective. So I didn't actually have to live through much of that. I was young, but I didn't have to deal with a lot of that because I was so young. So those impressions aren't on my mind when I look at Jimmy Carter, those impressions of the 1970s. So I'm able to take an approach looking at the work he's done since leaving the White House. And I'm also able to take an objective look at his time spent in the White House. I actually do have a certain affinity for the man. I have a tremendous amount of respect. And it is, in some ways, it's a little difficult to sort of not imagine, you know, your own grandfather or your own relative in Jimmy Carter.
Kane Farabaugh says Jimmy Carter is just as active today as he was when they first met 9 years ago.
He's just as active as he ever has been. Or you'll see him travel to Latin America or Nepal or other places in the world where he is actually physically participating in the Carter Center's election monitoring missions. And then actually just this year, he wound up spending 2 weeks on a trip to China, where he traveled all around China in August. And if anything, he is perhaps traveling more than maybe he ever has, at least while being with the Carter Center. And so he shows no signs of slowing down. When he's not actually traveling the world, you can see him in Plains teaching Sunday school at his church in Plains, or he may actually be in his wood shop carving wood sculptures or making wooden furniture. Or he's a prolific artist. He enjoys getting behind the easel and painting.
Kane Farabaugh believes Mr. Carter was not unhappy about turning 90.
You know, he doesn't shy away from the fact that he is this old, and there's been a path for him from the White House to the point at which he's reached now. And he doesn't have any apologies. I think he's lived a full, rich life. It's been more successful than I think he ever could have predicted for himself and for his wife, Rosalynn. They've been married now 68 years. And not only did he have a successful post-presidency, but he's had a lifelong successful marriage. And I think there's a lot that in his longevity, he's been able to pass along to people to sort of set an example for how you can live a rich, full life.
Kane Farabaugh says Mr. Carter is writing at least two more books. He hopes to interview the former president when those books are published. We will bring you Kane's stories when he does. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America. Human Rights Watch has warned that Turkey is becoming more authoritarian. The group says the rule of law is slowly breaking down under Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and it accuses him of launching a campaign against opponents and media freedom. We hear more from Bob Doty.
Human Rights Watch says Mr. Erdogan and his ruling Justice and Development Party are taking steps to control the media and the Internet. It also claims they are clamping down on those who are critical of the government. Emma Sinclair Webb studies Turkey for Human Rights Watch. She also wrote the group's new report on the country. She says the changes there are very concerning.
Basically, over the last year, we've seen Turkish government respond to political opposition with an extremely heavy-handed approach, which basically is willing to sacrifice the rule of law, to erode judicial independence, and to really tear up the rule book and wield the stick against political oppositionists.
The report says the human rights situation in Turkey has worsened since nationwide anti-government protests last year. The protests were directed at Mr. Erdogan, who was then prime minister. He was elected president in August. Emma Sinclair Webb says that since the unrest, there have been more restrictions on the media and the Internet and stronger punishments for protesters.
Then there are some very serious prosecutions of protesters for even attempting a coup against the government. They face a possible life imprisonment. So you've got still the crackdown against the Gezi protesters continuing a year on, and very little justice for those who were the victims of the massive police violence during the Gezi protests.
The report also says Turkey's government has weakened the rule of law, the belief that laws, not individual officials, should govern a nation. Emma Sinclair Webb says the government wants to have control of judiciary powers, the courts and judges.
And they basically have shown signs of wanting to have prosecutors and judges who simply do the government's bidding and simply act according to the government's interests. Once you start creating a judiciary that does that, you lose all independence of the judiciary and you fundamentally undermine the rule of law.
Human Rights Watch did praise the Turkish government for its efforts to end the 30-year conflict with the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK. It also says government reforms have given minorities in the country greater rights, but it is calling for the release of the many non-violent Kurdish political activists who have been jailed for many years. I'm Bob Doty.
Now it's time for you to practice reading and speaking the words you have just heard. First, use your printer to print the stories. Then download the audio and save it as a podcast. Next, read along and listen to a few sentences. Then say the words slowly and try to pronounce the English words just as we do. If you will do this every day, you will make fast progress. Remember, we are here every day with a new program, and we bring you interesting things about our world. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Parts of the southwestern American states of Texas and Oklahoma have experienced severe dry weather for several years. This drought has affected the growth of cotton and grains. The governor of Oklahoma says the state has suffered $2 billion in agricultural losses since 2011. Some heavy rain fell recently, but for most farmers, it did not come soon enough. Matt Muller is a farmer in southwestern Oklahoma.
We were doing very well farming up until about 2010. In the fall of 2010, it basically stopped raining. And for the past 4 years, we've been in a continuous drought.
Mr. Muller was hopeful earlier in the year. Spring was cool and wet, and summer came early. But that hope went away when the rains did not come.
Things looked phenomenal because of the mild weather and the showers we were able to catch. But then August 1st, it's like the blowtorch showed up.
High temperatures and lack of rain meant most crops did not grow. But that was not the case with mung beans. Mr. Muller says that crop did well because it can grow even when there is not much rain.
When it started raining, we jumped in and tried that crop, and it was able to beat the heat of August and finish out and make a decent crop before it burned up in August.
Those kinds of crops help farmers survive. Irrigation can also help farms. Irrigation systems use water from underground when there is not enough rain. But crops like cotton are more valuable than mung beans. And it is those kinds of crops that are being hurt by the drought. Clint Abernathy is a cotton farmer. He has paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for machines to help him harvest his crop. He says he has not grown as much cotton in the past few years as he predicted.
This year we did have enough rain in June and July to grow a crop that it looks better, and it is better, but this is ground that we would normally want to make 3 bale an acre plus on, and right now we're looking at probably a half to three-quarter bale cotton crop.
Mr. Abernathy says before drought struck the area, he grew much bigger plants, and each had more cotton on them.
This is a stressed plant that did not produce what it had the potential to do.
He says insurance has helped provide money when his crops fail. But he says what farmers really need is more water and better prices for what they grow.
Even with crop insurance, we're going downhill. You know, our insurance yields just keep going down every year. Prices, commodities, all commodities except livestock, just keep going down.
Livestock prices dropped a few years ago. That is when the drought forced many ranchers to sell their livestock. But few farmers in the area have anything left to sell now, and that hurts the local economy. So farmers in southwestern Oklahoma are doing what farmers throughout the world have done for centuries. They are hoping for a better year next year. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, This is Science in the News. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Bob Doty. Today we tell about Parkinson's disease. We also report on treatments for the disease.
Parkinson's is a disease of the central nervous system. It is a progressive disorder, meaning it gets worse over time. The disease affects a small area of cells in the middle of the brain. This area is called the substantia nigra. The cells slowly lose their ability to produce a chemical called dopamine. The decrease in the amount of dopamine can result in one or more general symptoms of Parkinson's disease. These include shaking of the hands, arms, and legs. Other signs can include difficulty moving or keeping balanced while walking or standing. There might be emotional changes, like feeling depressed or worried. The symptoms of Parkinson's differ from person to person. They also differ in their intensity.
The disease is named after James Parkinson. He was a British doctor who first described this condition in 1817. During the 1960s, researchers discovered changes in the brains of people with Parkinson's. These discoveries led to medicines to treat the effects of the disease. There is no cure for Parkinson's and no way to prevent it. And doctors still are not sure what causes the disease.
America's National Institutes of Health says at least 500,000 people in the United States have Parkinson's disease. About 50,000 new cases are reported each year. That number is expected to grow as the average age of the population increases. Parkinson's often affects people around the age of 60. Some researchers believe that almost everyone would develop Parkinson's eventually if they lived long enough.
Most patients have what is called idiopathic Parkinson's disease. Idiopathic means the cause is unknown. People who develop the disease often want to link it to something they can identify. This might be a medical operation or extreme emotional tension. Many doctors reject this idea of a direct link to Parkinson's. They point to people who have similar experiences and do not develop the disease. There are several theories about the cause of Parkinson's, but none has been confirmed. Studies have shown a link between the disease and some chemical products. In early 2013, a United Nations study found that man-made chemicals in everyday products are to blame. Other researchers say the disease could result from having contact with chemical pesticides, like those used for killing insects.
Scientists say it is difficult to show a direct link between diseases like Parkinson's and the environment. But in 2007, a European study found a link between Parkinson's and pesticide use. The study also showed that serious head injuries increased a person's risk of the disease. Scientists at Aberdeen University in Scotland collected information about more than 900 people with Parkinson's or similar conditions. They compared this group to to almost 2,000 people without the disorder. All the people were asked about their use of pesticides, chemical fluids, and metals like iron. The researchers also collected information about family history of the disease and head injuries. Farm workers and people who said they often used pesticides had a 41% greater risk of Parkinson's than others. The disease was also 2.5 times more common among people who had been knocked unconscious more than once in their lives. These people temporarily lost consciousness after suffering a blow to the head.
Another area of study is family genetics. There are examples of members of a family having Parkinson's disease. The National Institutes of Health says about 15% of Parkinson's patients are related to others with the disease. About 10% of Parkinson's cases are said to result from genetic mutations, changes within specific genes. One such mutation is called Parkin. Recently, German scientists reported finding what they call a signal transduction pathway that activates the Parkin gene. They said it also prevents stress-induced death of dopamine-producing neuron cells.
American scientists reported finding how the most common genetic mutations in familial Parkinson's damage brain cells. They said these mutations prevent an intracellular system from operating normally. This system prevents a protein called alpha-synuclein from reaching harmful levels in dopamine-producing neurons. The report came from researchers at the Columbia University School of Medicine and the Albert Einstein College of Medicine of Yeshiva University in New York. Their findings were published in the journal Nature Neuroscience.
There is no cure for Parkinson's disease, but improved treatments to ease the effects of the disease make it possible for many patients to live almost normal lives. People who have lost their ability to do many things sometimes are able to regain some of these abilities with treatment. The most commonly used drug is levodopa, combined with carbidopa. The National Institutes of Health says levodopa is a chemical found naturally in plants and animals. When it reaches the brain, levodopa is changed into dopamine, the chemical that is lacking in people with the disease. Carbidopa delays the change in levodopa until after it reaches the brain.
Levodopa helps ease symptoms of Parkinson's, but it does not prevent more changes in the brain that are caused by the disease. Other drugs used to treat Parkinson's disease act like dopamine. They produce reactions in the nerve cells in the brain. They can be given alone or in combination with levodopa. Many of the possible side effects are similar to those linked with the use of levodopa. They include sleepiness, feeling sick, or having bad dreams.
An operation called deep brain stimulation also is used to treat Parkinson's disease. Doctors use this treatment to shock the brain in areas that help send messages to the body. These areas can become blocked in Parkinson's patients. When this happens, the messages give misinformation to the body. In deep brain stimulation, doctors make two small holes in the patient's head. Next, two thin electrical wires are then placed in the brain. They are connected under the skin to another wire that leads to a small battery placed in the chest. The device supplies electricity.
Deep brain stimulation can reduce the need for levodopa and other drugs. It also helps to reduce symptoms such as shaking and slowness of movement. But brain stimulation has been shown to have more side effects than drug treatments. In one study, about 40% of the patients who had the operation experienced problems, including infection. Deep brain stimulation is not the answer for all Parkinson's patients. Doctors say it is best for patients whose medicines cause side effects or are not working. The treatment is not new. It was first approved for use in the United States in 1997.
Some American researchers think they have found a way to slow the progression of Parkinson's disease. Scientists at Northwestern University looked at the brain cells that were most at risk of getting the disease. The cells reportedly permitted lots of calcium to enter their cell bodies. The calcium killed dopamine-producing cells and led to signs of Parkinson's disease. The scientists say they found a drug that limited the ability of the brain cells to take in calcium without causing harmful side effects. More tests are planned. Scientists are also exploring experimental treatments. Since taking office, President Obama ended restrictions on the use of federal money for studies of human embryonic stem cells. Stem cells from very early embryos are able to grow into any tissue in the body. Scientists say such cells might be able to cure or treat diseases like Parkinson's. But opponents say stem cell experiments are wrong because human embryos are destroyed. They say this is just like destroying a human life.
This Science in the News was written by George Grow. Our producer was June Sims. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Bob Doty. Join us again next week at this time for more news about science on The Voice of America.